This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
If this drama at the Philadelphia Eagles prevents them from winning a Super Bowl, that is going to go down as one of the all-time most pathetic things that I've seen in a while. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. And Pearl, I know this is close to you. This is the team you root for, you grew up rooting for. It's near and dear to your heart. But as an outsider, I love this if I'm the Detroit Lions. I love this if I'm the Minnesota Vikings or whatever other NFC contender you think exists out there. I love seeing Philadelphia just burn internally from the inside out. If you're just getting up to speed, it's some drama between A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts that was brought to light by former All-Pro Brandon Graham, who's a part of the team, is a leader of the team, was on the Super Bowl team, but is on injured reserve right now.
Yeah, so I don't understand, though. How? Let me ask you a couple questions, some background. How long do you think this has been going on?
Like 2 years.
Right. So, obviously, what is A.J. Brown, who's a huge part of this, obviously the main part of
this. Yeah, he's the
main. What is his record when he's on the field this year, Maggie?
Well, what's the record of the team?
When he is on the field, they are 10-0.
Okay.
So, obviously, there is no problem whatsoever. In fact, if that's a result of this tension, that he cannot be beat when he's on the field, then bring me more tension.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, considering what we saw last season.
Well, last year, the defense fell apart. Okay. What does that have to do with A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts not getting along?
Well, because I think that on the field, yes, the defense fell apart, but we've learned after the fact that there were a lot of things wrong in Philadelphia in terms of personalities, in terms of culture, in terms of locker room, all that stuff in an ESPN expose about how Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts didn't get along. And we know A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts had an issue last year. And while the record last year on paper was gaudy, 11-6, team got off to a 10-1 start. But there were, yes, a lot of factors, personalities being one of them last year that ultimately doomed the team right around this time when things started to really go south.
I don't see it that way. I think they had old defensive backs. And honestly, when Sam Howell is torching you for 400 yards on a regular basis, if you caught a screen pass, like Kevin Byard wasn't tackling anybody.
Sure.
Slay wasn't tackling anybody. Bradbury should have been out of the NFL. Like they could not stop anybody on defense. So Jalen Hurts would get the ball after a 9-minute drive and have no opportunity. So the offense fell apart in large parts, in my mind, because the defense fell apart. And the coordinators were awful last year. They put in Matt Patricia.
Oh, I know. They had to get rid of everybody. There was major house cleaning, but also there had to be, this was the whole thing about Sirianni. We talked about this even yesterday with our former boss, Spike Eskin, who hosts Afternoons in Philly. If you're Nick Sirianni, he called this weekend the most critical, most important game that he's ever coached.
Because
if you're not going to call the offense and you're not going to call the defense, you're not going to be the special teams, you've got to be the vibes guy. And having this come to light in this way kind of can only go one of two ways, right? It can either help the team and clear the air between two star players, or it's just going to make it way worse.
I don't see that. I didn't agree with Spike about that at all. I think that this game is almost irrelevant because they're pinned into the number two seed. Because if they win the NFC East, they get the two seed because the other division winners are not going to catch them. And they're not going to catch the Lions because the Lions have the tiebreaker advantage. They're one win ahead. So what difference does it make how they play against Pittsburgh? Because the whole thing comes down to How do they cover all the Lions' weapons, and can they establish Saquon? What difference does it make if Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown are getting along? These are very important football assignments here. They're obviously playing their gut, play as hard as they can. They're obviously super effective together. Like, what's the difference if they don't like each other afterwards?
Well, I would say that was a scare that the Carolina Panthers put into them last week. Are you sure they're playing the best they can? Are you sure they're giving all? Because, first of all, they always get off to these really bad starts. It's been historic of how bad they've been in first quarters. Yeah. Why are they so unprepared for such a great team? And listen, I'd rather be a good fourth quarter team than first quarter team. I get it.
Right.
But why are they getting off to these slow starts? And two, you know, this is what I don't love. I don't love in a sport that is such a team sport, mm-hmm. where we talk about culture and you can think it's overrated or underrated, but I know we all love watching those Dan Campbell interviews and we credit culture for a lot of the and talent for a lot of the turnaround that happened in Detroit. I just don't know how anyone can say our quarterback and star receiver, who the receiver, by the way, is not afraid to say anything after a game, even after a win, to air his grievances, that this is no problem. Oh, we're going to win the Super Bowl with these two dudes not getting along even after wins? Like, that just doesn't square to me for a team sport.
Yeah, I don't. First of all, they're obviously not the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Detroit looks amazing, but I think they're playing. I don't totally agree with you about the culture of that team either. Like, I watch it. Like, you watch the lineman. Watch a Lane Johnson interview. Like, this team definitely has a good culture. There's so many veterans. I guess his A.J. Brown, Jalen Hurts thing. Honestly, that was on Sirianni. Like, the Panthers game being close, he refused to pass the ball. He just would not drop back and throw the football. It was bizarre. He's like, well, it's just the Panthers. They don't scare us. So he kept running into the line, and it was a terrible offensive coaching. And I kind of agree with Sirianni. I'm not sure A.J. Brown was totally just talking about Jalen Hurts. Like, his number was not called by the coaching staff at all on Sunday against the Panthers. So I think he was super frustrated. But I don't see this as a defining factor for the Eagles at all. Like, you think they're giving less than 100% out there?
Well, I saw them basically by the skin of their teeth almost lose to the Panthers. And but so did the Chiefs.
They
I
literally
guess that.
Beat up the Ravens the week before. That was one game before.
Yeah.
They pounded the Baltimore Ravens of all teams. John Harbaugh is Baltimore Ravens. They out-toughed them. They out-pushed them. They threw them around the field.
Okay, and so why is anyone complaining then after a win?
Because A.J. Brown didn't get any targets.
Who cares? Why should he
Every wide receiver in the history of the NFL has done the same exact thing, from Jerry Rice to T.O. to actually, maybe Larry Fitzgerald didn't complain.
I don't think he did.
But definitely, I guarantee every receiver is always upset when he's totally frozen out of the offense.
And you know what a lot of them do after wins? They actually have the discipline not to say it.
Well,
after wins, Perloff, this is where, and it's not just this year. It's going back to last year. If it was just this year, I don't even think this is that big of a story, quite frankly, because you're right. A lot of people think wide receivers are just divas, and A.J. Brown may fall into that category.
Well, definitely.
Okay, but this is, again, why did Brandon Graham, whose character is unassailable in Philadelphia and in the NFL, why did he feel the need to go on a sports talk radio show and say these two guys have a conflict? It's personal. No one's talking about it, so I'm going to bring it to the surface. Like, I can't tell if that's indicative of a good culture or a bad culture. I think Brandon Graham had his reasons, but you can't tell me that it's not, that it's nothing. I don't want to hear that it's nothing.
What do you see? I mean, I understand the Panthers game, but generally watching the Eagles this year, do you see like any results of a bad culture? They feel like a very physical, engaged team.
Well, that's why the A.J. Brown stuff is so alarming, because you actually have a shot this year. Yeah. I thought it did feel like you exercised a lot of the demons from last year. And now all of a sudden, after a win, when you're 11-2, here comes a $30 million receiver who's like, I'm unhappy.
Right.
It's not great.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Would you change the Eagles Super Bowl odds if you were setting the line?
I'm just changing them in my mind. I'm downgrading them in my mind, but I'm not Vegas, but I'm downgrading them in my mind. I am, because, you know, I see the Lions, who last year had, I mean, one of the worst losses, right? Let's call it what it was. That NFC Championship game was just brutal. You have the lead, you give it away. They haven't cracked a scintilla, you know? They feel as together as ever. And
I don't know. Okay. I mean, Jameson Williams' personal foul against the Bears, like, I feel like the Eagles probably are less vulnerable to stupid plays than the Lions.
But I don't see them after games complaining about targets. You know, if Amon-Ra St. Brown doesn't get his six catches, I don't see him afterwards saying, you know, Jared Goff, like, what the hell are you doing, man? I just don't think that exists there, and it does exist with the Eagles.
I feel it's so funny. Like, I think on paper and I think the Lions are a better football team. I think the Eagles are a more mature football team, and that might, at the end of the day, that's the only chance the Eagles have, is that the Lions will implode. I do not see the same problems you do at all.
Wow. I don't think what A.J. Brown did was mature.
I feel like Jameson Williams is going to get a taunting penalty that's going to hurt the Lions. Something's going to happen. Like, who, when you watch them on the team, like, the Eagles honestly are not as talented as the Lions. There's just no way. But I do think the Eagles maximize their talent. They're going to ball control with Saquon, and they're going to play tough defense, which they did not have last year. Thank God they got a back four to, like, at least compete. Yeah, I don't see. I think the Eagles are closer to maximizing their talent than the Lions. Like, the Lions worry me. Like, they're the ones that, who I feel is a little unhinged. They're the best team. The Eagles, I understand this Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown thing, but honestly, like, what's wrong with it? I like it a little bit.
Okay, well, here's the other part, too. And you're welcome to weigh in at 855-212-4227. Is this Eagles drama really opened the door for the Lions? You thought, or any other team in the NFC that you think is a contender, you thought that Dan Campbell's risky fourth down decisions opened the door for the Eagles.
Yeah, I like that one, too. As an Eagles fan.
I think that the Eagles drama keeps the door propped open, if you will, for the Lions. But one other thing about A.J. Brown complaining after a win, that the passing game is not fixed. So we'll play some clips here from Nick Sirianni. So Nick Sirianni has to talk about it. Your offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, has to talk about it. All the guys on the offense have to talk about it. So what are you going to do here? Because Saquon Barkley has clearly been this force for the Eagles this season, right?
Sure.
He's been everything you could have hoped for and more.
Right.
Does now A.J. Brown complaining, does he now become the squeaky wheel that gets the oil? And does Kellen Moore, who said yesterday, we will try to find a way to, you know, get, you know, find more opportunities for A.J. Brown. So now I got to think about the feelings of my wide receiver. And I probably, a lot of offense coordinators probably deal with this behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But now I got to deal with it in a fishbowl that is Philadelphia, in a team full of stars, with massive expectations, with a quarterback who, quite frankly, doesn't say a lot. He's not one of those rah-rah QBs who's just going to take hold of the locker room in that way. He shows more by his play. He's more of a leader by example. And a coach who I think at times acts like a clown. So I don't think that they're set up right now to deal with any kind of major waves. Like, they had been riding some good wins here, and it turns out there was something simmering below the surface with these two guys.
Well, let me ask you a question. When the Eagles were 2-2 back in the beginning of the season, they lost 33-16 to the Bucs. What was your take on Nick Sirianni then?
Clown.
So do you think were you surprised that he won the next nine games?
You know, a little bit, because I thought the antics with the shaved head and the weird things that he's barking at his own fans. Like,
could you admit you might have been wrong about him then?
No, I think I'm actually right, because again, the wins they had never actually like cleared the air of what was clearly a holdover from last year.
I don't know. Like, then how'd they win nine straight games?
Well, how'd they win 10, go start 10-1 the year before, and then they all fell apart?
I think there was a few personnel reasons, and the coaching staff was so bad last year. Honestly, I think they just sort of muscled
away. But again, if the
coaching
staff was so bad, how'd they get off to a 10-1 start?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, eventually the defense just crumbled. There was also a couple injuries, but honestly, like, you bring up a good point. Like, if I'm the coaching staff, I'm toning down Saquon big time. But you're not going to jump the Lions to number one seed. So why am I using my super back? I'm giving him 10 carries in both these games. I don't care if we lose to the Steelers. You got Washington, Dallas, Giants. You do the only chance that you're going to have trouble, you're 11-2 and the Commanders are 8-5. As long as you keep ahead of them, you're fine. So, yes, you better start throwing the ball to A.J. Brown and stop giving it to Saquon all the time. I'm a little bit worried about the wear and tear on him. He's getting more touches than anyone in the NFL. Why are you doing that? That's a much bigger concern to me than Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown. Clearly, an angry A.J. Brown is a darn good player. I would keep that hornet's nest flying.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, though, right? Coach K used to say this about Christian Leitner or whatever. It's like, if you fuel him properly, he'll heat the whole building. And if you fuel him improperly, he's going to burn the building to the ground. And that's on the coach to understand each player and to make sure you're with guys like that who are kind of hot, maybe play better when they're frustrated or play better when they're angry. And that's not a crime. But it's on the coach to make sure that doesn't cross over into the burn it down territory. And we're getting kind of close to the burn it down. The fact that you and I are sitting here talking about it, the fact that Brandon Graham had to go on Philadelphia radio to air it out, I think we're getting close to the we're getting closer to the burn it down than we are controlling it, are we not?
Oh my God, the exact opposite. They're the hottest this team has been. Even during the Super Bowl run, they weren't playing this well. This is the best version of the Eagles I've seen in a long, long time. They beat the Rams easily. I mean, they pounded the Rams. So the Rams are probably a top five in talent team in the NFL. They killed the Ravens. Like everything, the Panthers game, they were dead asleep.
Yeah.
Like they had been reading their own headlines all week. That was very clear. That was a nice wake-up call. They'll probably drop this game, the Steelers, because they have no incentive to win this game.
Let's listen to Nick Sirianni. He's the head coach of the Eagles on the relationship between 1-11, between Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown.
I have more information. I see them every single day. I see what's going on in the building. And so you just have, like, to me, you know, we know what there's going to be noise, and I get, and I obviously get it, you know, just based off of what's happened here in the last couple of days. But I go on my daily relationships with these guys, with myself. I go on the daily relationships that I see every single day.
Well, if Brandon Graham is also seeing the relationships, because yes, he's rehabbing, but he's in the building and he's a legendary Eagle. He will be in the Ring of Honor or whatever they call it. He has a Hall of Fame resume, all that stuff. He's also seeing the relationship, and he's seeing that these two dudes have had personal beef that goes back to last season. So, head coach, you can say I'm on top of it. I know everything that's going on, but Brandon Graham would suggest otherwise, no?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, again, I'm not sure why Brandon Graham did that, but don't you think this happens on every team? You don't think Deebo Samuel was complaining during all the good Niners years?
Yeah, and do we say that that's awesome? Are we like, wow, Deebo, good for you? No, I mean, like, come on, Kyle Shanahan, get it together.
The only reason they didn't win a Super Bowl is because it had nothing to do with Deebo Samuel being mad. Like, yeah, I think this happens on teams all the time. I think there's tension on all good teams. And the other thing, too, is, again, like I look at the Eagles' issues when they're facing the Lions. Like whether A.J. Brown is mad is kind of small potatoes. Mm. I mean, listen, you are a Bills fan, and I saw Diggs yelling at Josh Allen.
And
on
what
the
did
sideline.
They do?
They were the hottest they've been in 5 years.
But what happened?
They just they got into a gunfight with the Chiefs where the Chiefs got the ball last. Like that was like an amazing result for the Bills. That tension didn't hurt the team at all.
The Bills took the biggest dead cap hit, non-quarterback edition, to get Stephon Diggs up on out of there.
I just don't think there's really an example of a team winning a Super Bowl with a receiver who's
openly
going crazy.
Like openly mad at the quarterback.
We asked the question last night, and I've been thinking about it since. I can't think of one.
Like openly mad.
Right.
And listen, there's a chance they get past it. There's a chance that Brandon Graham will be the person who like change their relationship forever.
Yeah.
And they, you know how guys are, like you guys come together, you hate each other, you come together, you clear the air.
Oh my God. You guys this relationship, you don't think like Jalen Carter's performance against the Lions is less important than this drama? Like this is like a football game. This is 11-on-11 and there's all sorts of strategy and like there's so much stuff going on. Like who cares if these two guys don't get along?
Well, because that's the thing about football. Yes, it's about X's and O's, but it's about more than that, right? It's about a togetherness. And I don't think that you love to see two guys, highly paid, high profile, team is invested in both of them, and they are not in sync.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the results speak differently.
But A.J. Brown's not satisfied with those results. The winning is not satisfying this guy. You're satisfied as a fan, but that's not what's going on in the building.
I hope he is mad and angry and not satisfied and carrying that Lombardi trophy in February. I hope he takes this right into the parade, how mad he is, because honestly, like, I can't, there's no way, like, the Eagles look great. I know they look terrible against the Panthers, but the Panthers, like, nobody's even paying attention to them and they make the game close to the end. But generally, like, yeah, I am so happy with the way the Eagles are playing.
855-212-4227. All right, well, get some little Eagles drama. If I'm a Lions fan, I'm just sitting back like, wahaha, like watch everyone else just, you know, deal with all their personality conflicts. When I got Dan Campbell, who, I don't know, I feel like people would run through a brick wall first, then ask why second.
Yeah, that's really the issue with the Lions. Except did you hear Teddy Bruschi go off on the Lions this weekend?
I did not know.
Oh, I mean, the Lions are so obviously, like, the Lions are the favorite. They have to act like the favorite and maybe not go for it fourth down at their own 28-yard line every time. They are evening the field because right now they're such a better team than everybody. Like, I think the Eagles are looking at the Lions and being like, wow, they got to get their act together.
You're asking the Detroit Lions to act like they've been there before? They've never been there before. They don't have to act like they're the favorite. This is like years and years and years of the Lions just being the ultimate underdog. They get to play both sides. They're technically the favorite, but in the minds of everyone, they're still the lovable loser. They're still the underdog. It's this really amazing space to occupy for Detroit.
Right, but they are neutralizing their personnel advantage by playing like they're not the best team in the league. That's what Bruschi said. I mean, they're definitely, look at their offensive line. Like, they should just pound everybody and be conservative and win the game. They don't have to be, like, radical. Thank God they are. Because, honestly, that's the only chance the Eagles have right now.
They'll never see it coming.
I think the theme of the day is going to be beefs. Not around here. We're good. No personality conflicts on this show.
If we could have some beefs and win 9 straight games, then maybe we need some beefs.
Well, I don't even know what we win. We're not even judged by ratings. Like, we can't even. We're judged on something different.
A Marconi? What are those? Yeah.
Get a Marconi.
Yeah. I honestly, like, if the Eagles don't get along like this and keep winning, oh my God, I love it.
Maybe we should get some more tension around here. No, we're not talking about us. We're talking about another beef that, I don't know about you guys, never saw this one coming. New documentary is going to expose two legendary players who have beef, and it was caught on camera. We'll tell you everything we're talking about. We'll explain it all. It'll make tons of sense in just moments. But again, if you want to call about the Eagles, and does this crack the door open, their drama, does this crack the door open for any other team in the NFC, a contender, to come in and take this conference? 855-212-4227.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. I understand what you were doing in the first segment, Maggie.
Trying to
make me nervous about my Eagles because you are secretly nervous yourself because the Buffalo Bills have to play the Detroit Lions this weekend.
I'm nervous about the Eagles because one of your all-pros went on radio and said the quarterback and wide receiver hate each other. That's why I'm nervous about the Eagles. Like, I didn't invent this out of thin air. Like, this happened.
I think there's some, you said some things. There's some Lions paranoia that I think you should be nervous, by the way. This is a tough assignment for your Buffalo Bills. This could be possibly a Super Bowl preview if you squint. I think it's interesting. Actually, as an Eagles fan, I want the Lions to win and seal up the number one seed so the Eagles can start resting their players early. This is, because you know how the NFL works. It's like, who's going to be healthy in the playoffs? It's the number one, number two, and number three most important issue. So this is a really interesting weekend. The Eagles play the Steelers, and doesn't mean much, but there might be some in-state feelings. I don't even know. And the Bills play the Lions. I'm very curious how this is all going to sort out. And now, because you keep talking about it, I'm very curious what A.J. Brown says after the game. Well, now all the cameras are going to fly to that guy after the game.
Of course. And Jalen Hurts speaks today, right? Quarterbacks speak on Wednesdays. So
he's not going to say anything. He never says anything.
Exactly. And like, I don't know. What's that called? Deference? There's like some kind of psychological term that you are accusing me of here.
I'm not accusing you. I'm kind of being funny because you guys play the Lions. I want to tease you in advance if you get killed by the Lions because they are really good.
I know. Well, I mean, listen, it feels like a big litmus test. Yeah, the Bills, without a doubt.
You say that, but you know that in this sort of interconference matchup, like, you're not going to get the A game for both teams. Like, they're going to hold back things.
Maybe. I mean, here's the thing. I was willing to overlook Buffalo getting smoked by the Ravens to say, okay, well, that could be a problem if they see them in the postseason. That could be a problem. Yeah. But I was willing to say, well, Ravens in the postseason don't exactly have the best track record. Not that Buffalo's blowing the doors off people, but they don't have the best track record. Lamar has a lot to prove in the postseason. Mm. And like, playing a team one time, maybe you totally flip the script on them another time. You just never know. If they get absolutely blown out by the Lions, I'm not going to feel great because that means that basically all the good teams that they play, they're either have to have a furious comeback like they did against the Rams and still fall short, or get smoked like they did against the Ravens. You have the bright spot of beating the Chiefs, but as everyone likes to point out to me, the Bills have beaten the Chiefs in the regular season before, and it hasn't meant anything.
Yeah, I mean, my counter would be last year the Ravens blew the doors off the Lions and then blew the doors off the Niners, and it didn't mean anything because the Niners and the Lions were right there in the NFC title game. So these cross-conference matchups are funny. I'm not sure you can really read too much into that. You know, A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts can fight all they want. The Eagles have the number one defense in the NFL. That's crazy talk. So I'm not getting off my pedestal on the Eagles. I feel really good about this team. I think they're the second best team in the NFC, and if things break right, they get the Super Bowl. Again, maybe I'm crazy, but I kind of like all this, like tension and anger because they're, I don't know, Jalen Hurts is like, it's not that great. Maybe this will help him play a little better. There's something like, this is not sending me into a panic mode. I guess the downside is Jalen Hurts could lose his confidence because A.J. Brown's glaring at him all game. But I don't even know, like, I'm not sure how this actually plays out on the field. I'm not sure. I'm not saying I know one way or the other. I just don't know how hard is it for Jalen Hurts to turn around and hand the ball to Saquon Barkley? What difference does it make if A.J. Brown likes him or not?
I think we should put the poll question up. Yeah. Like, what did Paul say? This could be a good thing? I don't know about that.
Local Philly man welcomes tension and anger. Shocker.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it's a Philly thing. Like, yeah, of course everybody's fighting. Like, it's like a big family. Yeah,
might as well be Christmas, you know, or whatever. This is just Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, if Saquon Barkley's coming around on the outside and A.J. Brown is mad and throws a block and pancakes a dude, and like, yes, let's go.
Do we think that's how this anger is going to reveal itself?
Oh, yeah. Watch A.J. Brown play. Like, he will throw people around like me with my five-year-old kid at the time. Yes, he is a monster on the field when he wants to be. He just loses focus sometimes.
Right. So, I complaining after wins. It's just, to me, unforgivable when you're talking about team sports. It's one thing to say, I wish I played better, even in a win. That's fine. You can be self-scouting. But to complain?
You should see my text thread after the Eagles almost lost to the Panthers. It was like fire Sirianni again.
Yeah, can't trust these fans.
Philly fans are, they're ready to go.
I trust Brandon Graham. I think he's got a pulse on the locker room more than Sirianni does.
Yeah, I mean, I used to trust Brandon Graham. I don't know why he said this, but I don't know. Maybe Brandon Graham was trying to fire up the guys a little bit. Or maybe he's trying to fix the situation. Who cares? Like, you have Jalen Carter on one side and Saquon Barkley on the other. Let's go. Let's just beat up everybody. The Steelers, by the way, the Steelers-Eagles game is going to be unwatchable. I mean, it's going to be carry after carry. It's going to be Najee Harris and Saquon Barkley. It's going to be 17-13, and we all know it.
I thought George Pickens might play.
He said doubtful. Yeah, doubtful yesterday.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Tomlin's downplaying it.
The chat is very much with you. I'm Daily. Maggie's displacing her concern about the Bills under the Eagles. I promise you I'm not.
Well,
I don't
you
have
be.
To.
We don't face the Lions this weekend.
My team went on local radio to blast another player on the team.
Yeah, but nobody on my team has to see Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery running right downhill at you next week with Penny Sewell blocking. That is a much bigger concern.
Give it a week. Give it a month, rather, and then you will.
Trust me, I am not sleeping over that exact situation.
Also, the chat really loving Seth freaking Rollins. You guys acknowledged over there with the burn it down. It did not go under the radar.
Paying attention on the show, unlike what's the connection? Segment yesterday. Maggie kept saying that burn it down. She said it like five times. So I'm like, well, let's play Mr. Seth Rollins. Burn it down.
Guest on the show.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, because Andrew Bogus is here, and he loves your interest in pro wrestling over there. He just thinks it's the coolest thing.
It's his favorite thing about EJ, Pete.
One of his favorite things is I love superhero stuff.
Well, when you throw a rest last week to pull the curtain back on Great Debate, when I suggested my person, you said, I don't think that fits. I said, who do you have? And you said a wrestler in a sports conversation.
What was the Great Debate again?
Biggest sports enigma.
Yes. And I said Freddie Adu, and you said, nah, I don't know. I'm going to go with Hulk Hogan. That feels like a...
Sir, it was CM Punk.
Whoever it was.
CM Punk, he fought in UFC, so therefore he's more than a wrestler.
He fought. Yeah. He got in the octagon.
Yeah. He fought twice, and he got knocked out, but he did fight.
Air quotes fight. He showed up.
If I got in and got knocked out, I would not be a UFC fighter.
There's actual real UFC fighters that are more enigmas than CM Punk. Yeah. You could have gone with McGregor or anyone, Nate Diaz, I don't know, someone else.
There's John Jones. Enigma about the Hulkster. I mean, that is he's coming right at you.
I just couldn't remember who he picked last week.
I think if we were doing opposite of enigma, then we'd have Hulk Hogan.
I can't wait to say which wrestler wins this week. I'm excited for that pick.
We're going
to squeeze that guy in.
Yeah. Very, very hard to do a wrestler this week.
Yeah, great debate comes your way.
Or Bruce Bochy, if Pete's listening.
Well, you could do Brock Lesnar. Didn't he play a little college football?
Maybe.
I think Big Show played college basketball.
Oh, Goldberg. Right? Goldberg played at Georgia Tech.
Goldberg was a damn good player.
Yeah, Roman Reigns played with Calvin Johnson.
Roman Reigns is also pretty good.
Maybe that's a future great debate. Greatest wrestler.
Bogus will quit the show before we hit.
No, that's
a good one. Sign me up for that. Like what they did best in a real sport, in an actual sport.
How about The Rock was on Miami?
Yeah.
Well, you know who I'm picking.
Oh, by the way, like if we did that great debate, we would have to shut down the phone lines. There'd be so many calls. I agree with you on that one.
You can do McAfee. One of the Paul brothers is in there.
Definitely. Yeah, Logan Paul. Boxer, boxer and wrestler.
Oh, my God. Man, now you're getting into controversy. I feel like Logan Paul and Jake Paul are closer to the CM Punk. You beat a 59-year-old Mike Tyson and that makes you an athlete? Okay.
100 million people watch that.
Hey, look, Logan fought Floyd Mayweather. So.
Again, air quotes.
Yeah.
Bogus has headlines for us. Lots happening today.
It's all sponsored by Prize Picks. Football season heating up, and Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action. Download Prize Picks and use code PRIMETIME and get a $50 credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states where it's lawful to wager. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. You have probably figured it out by now. That underlying, unexplained excitement you felt all day yesterday was actual anticipation for the NBA Cup quarterfinals. The Bucks and Magic did not disappoint last night.
And with 40 seconds left, Damian Lillard's got it coming across midcourt, keeping going to the basket. The seas parted and Lillard finger rolls it home. Bucks in front, 108-107.
Oh, the drama. Dave Kane, Bucks Radio. Damian Lillard scoring 9 of his 28 in the final minute to drag Milwaukee past Orlando, 114-109. Giannis throwing in 37. They beat a Magic team that was shorthanded. No Paolo Banchero, no Franz Wagner, so leaving a proud head coach, Jamal Mosley.
I can't be more proud of their effort, their energy, their sticking together throughout the runs within the game that shows continued growth for this team and understanding how good we can continue to be.
But sadly for them, it's the Bucks that move on to Vegas, waiting on the Knicks or Hawks, who play tonight on the West Side. The Thunder moving on after a 118-104 decision over the Mavericks, 39 points for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Kawhi Leonard returned to practice yesterday, the first time he's been on the floor with Clipper teammates since the end of last season. There is no public timetable for Kawhi and his right knee returning to game action, but it reportedly could be within 2 weeks.
I feel like I've been held hostage by Kawhi Leonard injury updates for most of my adult life at this point.
Well, no, but you're not held hostage anymore because you even care?
Like, no, I don't.
Does anybody care if Kawhi Leonard plays or not anymore? That story... No, it's a good tour to happen. I'm telling you,
it's an important
it jumped
update.
The shark about 6 years ago.
I was just thinking as you were reading that, I'm like, all right, Kawhi's back. I'm like, man, how long have I been hearing Kawhi Leonard injury updates? When did he come in the league? Like 2012?
Yeah, this feels like me going, oh, Grey's Anatomy is still on TV.
Exactly.
Oh, Kawhi is still trying to play. Okay. Good for them.
How do they still have storylines on that show? Is it because there's just no ending to medical ailments that you can have?
And I mean, they've done everything. When I watched with my wife, like the first, I don't know, 5 or 6 seasons, they had already gone through like a plane crash and a helicopter crash and a car crash. And so they must just be doubling and tripling down on storylines.
Can you guys guess how many seasons Grey's Anatomy has been on television?
22.
22?
I'm going to say 21.
It might be 21.
I mean, think about it. They came into the league the same year as LeBron James. That's a long time for a TV show.
21 seasons.
21 seasons.
And I told you guys off the air, there's a fascinating documentary on Peacock about this lady who ended up being like the head writer of Grey's Anatomy, and she completely fabricated her entire life. and finally got caught in all these lies. Said she had cancer, didn't have cancer, killed people in her family, like, you know, that they died, they didn't die. Like, it's ridiculous.
Wait, but she didn't kill anybody.
No, like, she killed them off, right, but they were still
the story,
fine.
Yeah,
like, and then, like, she would steal people's personal stories and put them into the script and then get, like, credit for this great idea. And they're like, oh, that happened to me. And it's unbelievable how long this went on and how successful she was. Completely creating a life for herself. It's nuts.
Well, that makes it. I mean,
and it's still ongoing. It's not done yet. Like, she only recently got found out.
That makes sense because that's what Grey's Anatomy feels like. Like, that's perfect for that kind of role, to be a writer who can fabricate things. Like, I think that's a good skill
for a writer of Grey's Anatomy. Only on paper. You can't. Yeah. Like, she had people raise money for, like, sick family members not sick.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. You remember?
She's a scam artist. Although, taking things from other people's lives, I imagine writers do that a lot.
Right. Well, I was just thinking about it. I hate to be that guy who quotes Seinfeld when Jay Peterman bought Kramer's life stories. the publisher had no stories of his own, so he was talking to Kramer's like, can I buy all your personal stories? That's what that sounds like to me. Yeah.
But at least he asked.
Yeah, he actually paid for them.
Right.
No, I think, you know, if you talk to a screenwriter of Grey's Anatomy, you have to know everything you say is going to be used on the show.
I think it's like when people talk to us. It's like when people tell me interesting things, I'm like, that's going to the show. That's going to the show.
What I find interesting, not that this is going to, but this, when they lose an actor because of a contract situation, they kill them in like horrible ways. Like Grey's Anatomy has this weird thing where they kill all their popular actors. My daughter's like weeping on the couch. I'm like, what's going on? Looking at her iPhone.
It's like Dr. McDreamy.
Yeah. I mean, not spoiler because it happened now 14 years ago, but they killed Patrick Dempsey. Like, just let him. He wanted more money. Just let him walk. Yeah, he got killed in 2012.
Cancer.
No, he died in a car accident.
One of them was sick. One of the lead doctors, I feel like, when I was still watching it.
Probably. One of the lead doctors got so mangled in a car accident that they didn't know it was him, and they performed surgery on him in the last 5 minutes of the show. I'm going to get emotional here. This is George. They're like, oh my God, it's George, who's been on the show for 14 years and then had a contract dispute with Shonda Rhimes, and now his whole face is disfigured, and he dies. This is literally what happened.
This is like what I would imagine if Bill Belichick was a screenwriter or something. The way that he so willingly traded guys like out of town who would help them, you know, like the Richard Seymours and stuff. It's like if Bill Belichick was writing the script, it's like not only are you gone?
Yeah.
There's no possibility you're ever coming back. We can only identify you by the dental records.
I know, absolutely. By the way, when we were kids, nobody died in shows. Like, once in a while I died, it was like huge news.
I mean, when Dr. Green died on ER, that hurt.
Well,
I think it was high school.
I remember when Sopranos killed off a character whose name I can't say aloud. That was so shocking. Like, and now everybody dies.
Wait,
like,
you don't want to say who it is? It happened so long ago.
No, he doesn't want to say the name.
The name is, I guess, explicit.
I thought you were talking about the girlfriend.
Which girlfriend?
Christopher's.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was shocking, too.
No, he's talking about big...
Yeah.
The first time...
That's The Sopranos. Everybody dies. It's a mob movie.
Right, but the first time, it was like the year 2001 when they shot the most lovable character on camera. I was like, what is going on here? When I was a kid, I don't think they killed people like that. Like nobody took out Archie Bunker. I don't know.
I think Archie Bunker...
They killed the dad on Good Times.
They did?
They did?
Yeah, that's like very famous. It's like a very famous John Witherspoon went to do Roots. And then he died of a heart attack.
I think the OC.
He passed away recently, right?
Yes.
The OC, they were just knocking off people left and right. And then obviously Game of Thrones when they killed Ned Stark in the first season. It was shocking.
Which show does not fit in critically with the other one? Just mentioned.
The OC has gotten a second life.
Like Sopranos, Game of Thrones.
Are you watching it now or back then?
Back then.
Okay. Totally watching it now with my daughter, by the way. Oh, my God. I want to be Seth, the nerd who gets all the girls. Yeah, no,
he's
I'm not.
He's based on you. You're older.
No. Seth is quietly dating supermodels left and right. Rachel Bilson was his girlfriend, who was like a 10. I am not Seth. I mean, maybe my wife is a 10, but in high school.
There he is.
First of all, he's like 35 years old.
Keep saving abuse.
He's a junior in high school. He's probably 35 years old, dated like a supermodel. It's like, that's life in the OC, I guess.
All right, well, we left no more time for sports. 855-212-4227. We got a major beef, though. It's going to be the theme of the show between two legendary players that we did not see coming. We'll get to that next. Theme of the show today, beefs. One we did not see coming was apparently a long-held grudge, Perloff, that Mark Gastineau, the legendary defensive lineman from the New York Sack Exchange, had against Brett Favre. So obviously Brett Favre is involved in one of the more, I would say, controversial plays in NFL history. It was Michael Strahan breaking the sack record. And it's a game that was out of hand already when the Packers came to New York to play the New York Giants. And Favre kind of takes a dive and gives Michael Strahan the record. It's kind of an unsatisfying, quite frankly, like, moment for Strahan. But the moment came. The moment happened.
Right.
And Mark Gastineau, who was in attendance that day, so you would kind of think he's sort of giving his blessing and kind of understanding, hey, the torch is being passed here. But all these years later, that is not the case. Here is a clip from a soon-to-be-released ESPN 30 for 30 with Mark Gastineau saying the NFL should not have awarded the sack to Michael Strahan.
Anybody will tell you Brett Favre took a dive. And you know it. She knows it. He knows it. And everybody knows it. I didn't know what had happened. The NFL should have stopped that and said, listen, no. That's not a sack.
Okay. So that obviously didn't happen. It's not going to happen. And here's a PS to this story that Mark Gastineau had been harboring this resentment towards Brett Favre for taking the dive for all these years, that at a memorabilia show in Chicago some years later, he actually goes to confront Brett Favre.
And you told me
a long time ago. I saw you.
Right.
How you doing?
When you fell down for him. I'm going to get my sack back. I'm going to get my sack back, dude.
You probably would hurt me.
Well, I don't care. You hurt me. You hurt me. You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You really hurt me. You hurt me, Brett.
We got to get back to this, Brett. I'm sorry.
Brett Favre.
I mean, awkward is the doesn't even begin to describe this thing.
Brett Favre is like, do. Oh, hey, former player. We met before. How you doing? He did not see that. No. That smoke coming at all.
No, he didn't. Here's the thing. I understand from Mark Gastineau's point of this that with years now to ruminate on it, again, he was in the building when this happened, when Strahan set the record. And so an idea that he was okay with sort of passing the torch, but you ruminate on it for years. And the fact that Gastineau now believes that this has cost him money because he cannot claim to be like the sack king, or that it may have cost him a shot at the Hall of Fame, I think now he's just living with all of this resentment. And obviously there's nothing he can do to change the outcome. So he's kind of left here with just his frustration, and he took it out on Brett Favre, which is really not the place to put it. It's not Brett Favre's fault.
Yeah, I feel like you're being a little rational about Gastineau, who has documented CTE problems. Like, I feel like he obviously, you can even hear in his voice, there's something off. The logic of it, I totally understand what you're saying, but I think this seems like a sick person kind of. This does not sound like a sane conversation. And unfortunately, like, I'm just imagining a football player from the 80s, this probably is a result of playing football, right? Like, I felt like I was listening to like it was a live version of Antonio Brown's Twitter feed. Like, I felt like that was a CTE story right there. I'm sure the documentary is almost mostly about that, right?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's just about the New York Sack Exchange. Yeah. And so, listen, Mark Gastineau is one of the all-time characters in the NFL. Right. I mean, he's married to famous women, Brigitte Nielsen, dating famous women, lived a life in the spotlight. I think he had a reality TV show at one point with his daughters, maybe. I think that might be right. EJ, if you might be able to check that. He's just had this larger than life personality. And in New York, and with this cool nickname for the Sack Exchange and just how dominant that defensive line was, he created this sort of, you know, a persona, or maybe this is his persona. So I think you're right. It's probably about there might be some head trauma there, but I also think Mark Gastineau's a character. I think he would do something like this.
Yeah, it's interesting. So in 2017, he told the Daily News that he had dementia, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's, and it was a result of football. Like, I could tell.
Do you think he's being exploited here?
Oh my God. Like, what is ESPN doing? Like, I feel like they're putting this out there. Like, oh, look at this guy. But didn't he sound sick to you guys in that thing? Like, that clearly was not a rational conversation.
I mean, I think It's tough to say, and you're right. He did admit that he has these issues. Oh, that's not tough to say.
He definitely, like, you could hear in his voice, there was a little slur. Like, he's not all there.
I just hope that if he can resolve this in his mind, because to walk around with these kind of feelings, and then to not just have these feelings, harbor this resentment against Brett Favre, to actually go confront him about it, you know, that's the sign that he obviously needs some major help.
No, I don't think these feelings are rational. I don't think he was probably even that mad in the moment. I think that his brain is doing things, is tricking him into things because of this head stuff. Don't you think, like, he's irrationally angry? Like, I'll bet you, like, he probably has all sorts of issues. I'm dying to... I mean, I feel like ESPN put this out there to make him look weird, and they're like, come watch this sort of, I don't know, whatever it is.
Oh, you think
sideshow.
That they're putting him out? I mean, listen, but that's the thing about Mark Gastineau, and the show is called Gastineau Girls, thank you, about his daughters. I think that he...
It's about his daughters?
Yes.
That was the reality show, it was about his daughters.
Oh,
they're very
sorry.
Pretty
yeah,
blondes.
Yeah.
I think that he... Listen, all of that aside, I think he is a character who would put himself in these situations. Mark Gastineau was never a shy violet, right? And if he's thinking now about all the money I lost out on because I can't claim to be the single season sack holder, which, by the way, has been broken since by TJ Watt, it's cost me all this money, and he thinks it's cost him the Hall of Fame. We'll get more into it. 855-212-4227.